Laudator Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to this edition of our English feature program. I'm Philippa Hitchin. Coming up today, learning new languages, how the latest digital technologies are profoundly shaping the way we communicate our faith in today's media culture. The logic of gift. A seminar here in the Vatican examines how the principles of Pope Benedict's encyclical Caritas in Veritate can be put into practice in the cutthroat business world. And 40 years of Jewish-Catholic dialogue. A high-profile meeting in Paris will be taking stock of problems and progress since the Second Vatican Council. The language of modern high-tech communications is the subject of a meeting that will shortly be taking place here in the Vatican, bringing together media experts from countries around the world. The Pontifical Council for Social Communications is holding its plenary assembly from February the 28th to March 3rd, reflecting on the challenges of finding a new language for the Church in this fast-paced digital era and looking at some very concrete examples of best practice where churches have managed to make their voices heard in today's media culture.
Today we are talking about digital culture. Our problem is to see how we can think about our faith, about the message of Jesus, in the perspectives of this new culture.
Archbishop Claudio Celi is president of the Pontifical Council, whose members will be meeting with Pope Benedict on Monday.
I think that the source of our reflection is the last message of the Holy Father for the World Communication Day. In this message, the Holy Father is inviting us to think about the fact that the new technologies are not only changing our way of communication, but they are having a deep cultural transformation. I think that we must take knowledge about such a development. And so we thought that was important that we must consider that there is a new way of learning, of thinking. And certainly through new technologies we have a great, great opportunity to establish human relations and to build communion. I like to use such an expression, communion, because inside the Church, I think that it's important to think and to meditate that new technologies really are very helpful to create, to build up ecclesial community, communion. And we must also take conscience that in our human relation, we are needing a language. And so our problem, I think, that our point of reflection is to think how today the new digital culture is using new languages. And this, I think, is a delicate point because new languages are really influencing our way of life, our culture, are not only an expression, but also are changing. You can perceive today this, for example, how the young generations are influencing the grown-up people. You can perceive, for example, how children today are influencing the human culture of their parents, of their grandparents. Today you have grandparents who are using internet to chat with their grandchildren. It is funny. In Europe, you know very well that all generations of the third or the fourth generation are approaching new technologies because are pushed by the kids, by the children. But the problem is that not only we are learning how to use new technologies, but new technologies are really influencing our culture. our way of living.
This is a huge challenge for the church, isn't it, which has traditionally spoken in quite an exclusive language, which is only comprehensible to those already inside the church and not to these people, perhaps, who may be interested in its message but are unable to understand this very traditional language.
It is true, but consider that since the beginning, the community of the disciples of Jesus were facing these problems. Can you imagine the first disciples, just to take reference with Peter and Paul, in Rome, how the first community of disciples were facing the Greek-Roman culture and how they were trying to present, to offer the gospel, the message of Jesus, to another culture, to people who were involved in other cultures. But this was along the centuries. Today we are talking about digital culture. Our problem is to see how we can think about our faith, about the message of Jesus, in the perspectives of this new culture.
You're going to have some very practical examples, aren't you? Some very practical ideas of best practice where the churches in different countries are managing to do just that.
We were thinking that it was good to offer to the members of the council who are having their plenary meeting here in Rome from the 28th of February. We are offering to them just 3 moments of experience and reflection. So we were inviting some professors of the Salesian University, of the Faculty of Communication, to teach us, to help us to rediscover the meaning of new languages. And be careful also here. There is certainly a language connected with the new technologies, this multimedia technology. But there is also an anthropological language. What the human being today has in his heart and how we are able to have a real dialogue, a dialogue of life with such a person. And it's not easy, because you can imagine immediately, one matter is to talk with a young man of 18. Another way is to talk in a real way with a man of 80. And certainly it's not just only like to dress up in a different way. You are approaching a human being in different moments of his life. And my problem is to know what language I am able to use with such a person. So the first day will be languages, and we are having professors, university professors, just to help us to meditate, to think about such a problem. The second day we invited people from France who are using new technologies, multimedia, for some broadcasting, television broadcasting and radio broadcasting. And the third day, we invited the English team that were presenting the historical visit of Pope Benedict in England, the recent visit. They were using really, it is a masterpiece, I would say, and a great capacity to use new languages and also multimedia technologies to present the visit of the Holy Father. And so we thought that was good to invite the people involved in such a visit, in such a presentation, and to discover with them how, in what a way, they were interpreting the visit of the Holy Father in a multimedia presentation.
My thanks there to Archbishop Claudio Celi, President of the Pontifical Council for Social Communications, which is holding its plenary assembly here in the Vatican from February the 28th to March the 3rd. Charity is at the heart of the Church's social doctrine, at the heart of our personal relationship with God and with neighbour, guiding not only our micro-relationships with family and friends, but also our macro-relationships in the social, economic and political sphere. So says Pope Benedict in his encyclical Caritas in Veritate, before going on to analyse the global economic crisis and suggest solutions in the light of this basic moral and ethical principle. But are big businesses or struggling companies really going to heed a message which speaks of charity, of giving and sharing, of spiritual rather than practical, profit-driven solutions to their problems? Well, since the Pope's third encyclical was published in the summer of 2009, the Pontifical Justice and Peace Council has been organising a series of meetings aimed at exploring the principles and practical implications of its message on the different continents. Here in the Vatican, from Thursday to Saturday this week, the Council is holding a seminar entitled The Logic of Gift, bringing together professors and business practitioners to see just how the Pope's ideas can be applied, even in times of continuing economic hardship.
I think the markets are ripe for a reflection, a deep, sustained, substantial reflection on principal human values and spiritual values.
Monsignor Anthony Frontiero is an official at the Justice and Peace Council. I asked him to explain the goals and the scope of this three-day encounter.
Well, in the third chapter of the encyclical, the Holy Father focuses on the concept of gratuity, how giving and receiving gifts reflects God's nature, and how this gratuity also helps build communities. The Holy Father states that civil society is the most natural setting for gratuitousness, but that gratuity is also needed in the operations of the state and the market. And so, with reference to the financial crisis of 2007-2008, Pope Benedict argues against a market economy where economic agents act purely out of self-interest. He says that commercial logic alone cannot solve all of society's problems. The Pope then goes on to state that there is both a moral and an economic case to conclude that in commercial relationships, the principles of gratuitousness and the logic of gift, as an expression of fraternity, can and must find their place within normal economic activity.
It's not a message that big companies are normally wanting to hear. Do you think that after the economic crisis, there is perhaps a willingness to look at new models that might just be more effective?
Absolutely. I think the reception of the encyclical has been very widespread. Of course, there are always some concerns or criticisms because of the language of the Holy Father and of the Church in these messages sometimes easily escapes people. The concepts speak of transcendence when we're not used to speaking in transcendent terms, particularly when it comes to the market economy. However, I think, given the economic crisis, I think the people, in fact, the markets are ripe for a reflection, a deep, sustained, substantial reflection on principal human values and spiritual values that can help lift us out from the depths of despair, even economically speaking, and into a level of new hope.
You're bringing a lot of experts in, aren't you, to discuss these issues. I suppose the challenge is getting this wealth of reflection out into the marketplace where the action is. How do you do that?
Exactly. Well, this symposium is specifically designed to engage both academicians and practitioners, because for this very reason, we want the message of the Holy Father in Caritas in Veritate to be able to be integrated into the everyday realities of the market and the economy, of business and the corporate world. This way, both academicians and practitioners have something very valuable to share in light of Caritas in Veritate. And it is our hope that through this experience, all of these experts and the practitioners, business people who own and operate businesses, who actually are engaged themselves in areas of economic and social development through business and corporations, will be able to assist in practical ways in implementing the teachings that are contained in this letter.
Your council has been focused very much since the publication of the encyclical on trying to see ways in which on the different continents this message that it contains can be actually enculturated into the life of the countries and of the businesses in particular.
Oh yes, the council has, since the publication of the encyclical in 2009, the Pontifical Council for Justice and Peace has had already one other symposium on Caritas in Veritate in the context of the United States. So we had a lot of the experts from the U.S. here with us in October last year. And even prior to that, we had a meeting in Ghana, Africa, a Pan-African Congress to look at Caritas in Veritate and development in the continent of Africa. And we will continue this theme, particularly as we enter into the spring this year in the month of May. We will mark the 50th anniversary of Mater et Magistra, the encyclical letter of Pope John the 23rd. And so we will organize a World Congress around that encyclical, also bringing together academicians, practitioners, experts, to not only speak about Mater et Magistra, but also the implications of Caritas in Veritate in light of this anniversary year.
You've got some interesting people coming, as you say, to this three-day seminar here in Rome. Just give us, if you can, a taste of the highlights, perhaps. What do you think will be the most interesting areas of discussion that will be coming out of it?
Well, the other organizer for this symposium is the John A. Ryan Institute for Catholic Social Thought at the University of St. Thomas in Minnesota, the United States. Professor Michael Naughton has been sort of a trailblazer in this initiative with us, and he has brought together some experts from all over the world, many of whom engage in the field of the university, where centers of social doctrine are just evolving so that we can help our Catholic people and people at large, general population really, but mostly Christians, to appreciate the value of social doctrine and how it can affect positive change in our world in very practical ways. And the other aspect of the symposium will engage actual practitioners, business men and women, who will be joining us, who actually are engaged in initiatives of development throughout the world. I'm thinking of Mr. Andreas Weidmer, for example, who was a former Swiss guard here in the Vatican and now is the owner of this company called Seven. They're very much engaged in international development, helping people not only how to survive, but how to be protagonists in their own future. We think of the old saying, you know, if you teach a man how to fish, you can help him to feed him and his family for the rest of their lives. And so this is what some of these experts joining us will endeavor to incorporate into their reflections on this encyclical.
My thanks there to Monsignor Anthony Frontiero, an official at the Pontifical Justice and Peace Council. Years of Jewish-Catholic dialogue to overcome two millennia of mistrust and tensions between peoples of the two faiths. That's what will be on the agenda at a high-profile meeting of the International Catholic-Jewish Liaison Committee, taking place in Paris from February the 27th to March 2nd. Leading the Vatican delegation will be Cardinals Kurt Koch, Jean-Louis Torrent and Peter Turkson, together with patriarchs, bishops and experts from other countries engaged in interfaith dialogue. The meeting will be held at the Collège des Bernardins, where Pope Benedict gave a key speech during his 2009 visit to Paris, and will also include a trip to the Drancy internment camp, from where tens of thousands of French Jews were deported to the Nazi death camps during the Second World War.
This has been a long journey, because the depth of mistrust was very great.
Also taking part in this significant encounter is Bishop Brian Farrell, Secretary of the Pontifical Council for Promoting Christian Unity, which oversees the Vatican's relations with the Jewish world. I sat down with him to find out more about the meeting and about the current state of Catholic-Jewish relations.
This is one of the important formal meetings that we have with representatives of the Jewish community around the world. And this meeting has been taking place for 40 years, since right after the Second Vatican Council. This will be the 21st meeting because we hold the meetings every 2 years. Down the years, we have dealt with many themes, naturally. Now we decided that on the 40th anniversary, we need to take a look at what has been done and to draft the way forward. The meeting is a meeting of major representatives of many Jewish organizations. As everybody knows, there's no central government or authority within the Jewish religious community as such. So these representatives come together under the title of a kind of umbrella group, which has been in existence since, I believe, 1948, for Jewish people to take part in interreligious dialogue. So with them we meet and we discuss various themes. Mostly we have discussed questions of our common heritage, the elements of that heritage. We have discussed the role of faith in society. We have discussed education in religious values. And this year now we will try to do a summary of all that we've done so far.
Looking back and taking stock of progress, but also problems which seem to resurface fairly regularly, how would you characterize perhaps the climate at the moment as you head for these talks?
Well, I think that it is true that this has been a long journey because the depth of mistrust was very great. We have learned down the years to trust each other more and more. Once in a while, something happens to undermine or to make it appear that we no longer support each other. And that brings a bit of a crisis in our relationship. But the proof of the progress that has been made is the fact that every time that has happened in recent times, we have been able to explain ourselves to each other, and we have been able to overcome the tensions of the moment. Now, obviously, in our relationship with the Jewish community, the force of history is, it's a great weight, and it keeps cropping up. Some people make statements or do things that brings out the memory of the sad things of the past, and this can influence our relationship. I would say that at the present time, over recent years, we have made striking progress on the basis of Nostra Aetate, the document of the Second Vatican Council, which deals with our special relationship with the Jewish people because of the common reference to God's intervention in our human history. And that at the present time, we have made great efforts to approach the theological questions, which were very difficult to actually dialogue about. But now there is a new openness to that, and this deepens then the conversation.
There is also a great difference of opinion within the Jewish world, isn't there, as to how deeply perhaps the Vatican is committed to this dialogue. How representative is this group that you're dealing with in Paris of mainstream, if we can call it that, Jewish opinion?
Well, that is a good question because it's hard to say that there is a mainstream of Jewish opinion regarding interreligious dialogue and regarding, in particular, relations with the Christian community and the Catholic Church. But I would say that we have reached a point where this conversation that we have been carrying on embraces a big part of the Jewish people around the world. In the beginning, it was mainly an American and European conversation. Then, in more recent times, because we also have a dialogue with the chief rabbinate of Israel, they have begun to participate in this dialogue, and other representatives from Israel take part in it, so that now it has become a much more representative body. It's hard to say how the Jewish people, in all the different ramifications of their belief and practice, react to this, to our dialogue. But I would say that with the exclusion of some smaller groups who refuse to be in dialogue with practically anybody, this is very representative.
This is, of course, a time of great political tension for yes. Israel around the Middle East as a whole. I imagine the political discussions must also be under the spotlight during these theological discussions.
Yes, it's true that the circumstances in which we live and the events always influence the conversations that take place. In the past, we've had moments of mutual difficulty because of events that were taking place or because of questions such as Holocaust denial or the lack of true understanding of the questions of the Vatican archives and so on. We've had problems like this. Now today the conversation will undoubtedly be colored by events around the northern part of Africa and the Middle East. We don't have as yet a clear picture of how these events will go forward. So we can talk and speculate, but I don't think that we can have any clear conclusions about them.
My thanks there to Bishop Brian Farrell, Secretary of the Pontifical Council for Promoting Christian Unity, which includes the Commission for Religious Relations with the Jewish World. And that's all from me, Philippa Hitchin, and from all of us here at the English Programme for today. Do tune in again at this same time tomorrow if you can. Or don't forget, you can find all our news and feature programmes on the internet. Simply look us up at www.vaticanradio.org/English. You're listening to Vatican Radio, Laudato Jesus Christus.